From the Old Wool Store in Hobart, we bring you this highlights package from the 2019 Blind Citizens Australia National Convention. Thanks to our generous sponsors, Vision Australia and Guide Dogs Australia. Now here are your hosts, Fawn Bennison and Jonathan Craig.
Welcome to the second day of our coverage of BCA's 2019 National Convention. It's been a very busy day with an ongoing theme of technology and also, later in the program, a trip to the theatre.
The day began with an acknowledgement of country by Stephen Belbin, and then John Simpson officially welcomed us to the convention and gave us an update on the work of Blind Citizens Australia over the last 12 months.
Let me commence this morning with a little reading to you. In Hobart's old wool shed, our flock will gather round to shear the fleece of burden so we can break new ground. We'll spin the yarn our way and take pride in our choice, but we'll always be united when they hear us raise our voice. Canes and echolocation click, flick, tap, with dog guides and IRA to help bridge the gap. We won't be led by like sheep, and unique will be our space. Our diversity and strength will make the world a better place. The writing of BCA's Poet Laureate, Steve Richardson. Well done, mate. We have a room that is chock to capacity, 130 people in the room this morning, and of course other people working around the site. There's a team working in the radio room. There are our tremendous volunteers, people out on the registration desk. So we really have done well to bring such a great group to Hobart, and it's a pleasure to be here. And I do want to thank our Tasmanian branch, led by Doug McGinn originally and now Vaughan Bennison, for their great work in supporting this event. I also want to acknowledge our many special guests here with us this morning, and too many for us to name them all, but let me certainly highlight the fact that it's a thrill to have Senator Carol Brown with us. Carol is the Labor spokesperson for disability services, and she's been a great friend to the organisation over quite some time. It does help that she's in Hobart, and Emma Bennison does get home to Hobart from time to time, so they catch up. We have a number of representatives from our partner organisations, blindness service agencies, and I welcome all of you. We have people representing our various sponsors, and we'll hear more about our sponsors as we go through the day. So welcome to all of you. I also want to acknowledge our tremendous staff team who are all here. It's great that we were able to bring the full complement of 12 staff to Hobart, with the exception of Crystal Malcolm, who is home somewhat restricted in her travel because of her now, I think, about 2 months, 3 months old baby. So if you're listening, Crystal, we send our regards to you. To my board colleagues, thank you all for your support and the work that you're doing, not only with this convention, but throughout the year for BCA. Because in BCA, we are doing it our way, as the theme of the convention suggests. We take our own stand in how we develop our policies and implement those policies. We've been doing some of that work while we've been here in Hobart. There was a great meeting yesterday to further our advocacy work in relation to the negotiations with the Commonwealth Bank, the CBA, in relation to their Albert Terminal, and we'll hear more about that in the near future. We've also had other meetings. Emma and I were involved in a teleconference from here on Thursday, and we'll hear about that work as part of the session this afternoon. So lots of things happening as we do it our way. And one of the things that really is a strength of the organisation these days is the fantastic relationships that we've now built with blindness service organisations across this country. We have partnership agreements in place with Vision Australia, with Guide Dogs Victoria, Guide Dogs New South Wales, Guide Dogs Queensland, and it's great that those organisations are all represented here today. And we're building on that work, and this afternoon we'll see some of the fruits of the labour of our National Policy Council when we ask you to endorse our policy statement on expectations of service providers. And I just want to take the moment to say that's a very important piece of work, because it's a piece of work that's designed to help our members to understand what they should expect from service agencies. So it's a document that's been developed specifically to meet the needs of our members. A lot of what is said in the document is already current practice in virtually all organisations across this country, but we felt it important to document that, and we hope that those things that are additional to what's currently happening, we will be able to add and encourage our service agency partners to move towards those things. There's nothing too onerous in it, and we'll talk more about it later, but it is an important piece of work. And Fiona Woods, the chair of our National Policy Council, along with other members of the NPC, have done some great work in that area. We, of course, continue to work in the area of audio description, and had a fantastic workshop yesterday afternoon. And if the participants in that workshop are here this morning, I thank them for their support in that endeavour yesterday afternoon. Finally, communication. I've already mentioned briefly that this convention is being streamed via the internet, and we're using the support and services of the Radio for the Print Handicap Network, and particularly Vision Australia Radio based in Melbourne, to make our convention available to as many of our members around the country as is possible. 130 people here sounds good until you realise that that's a very small proportion of our membership. So I want to encourage those people who are listening to us to be part of this convention. Through the radio stream, we'll be promoting a mobile phone number, which is a text messaging number, that you'll be able to send in messages, particularly when we come to discussion and questions and answer sessions. So please, if you're listening at home, feel that you are part of this convention. I'm sorry we can't get the dinner or the barbecue to you, but there are always these physical limitations. But one of our key objectives is to make this organisation as easily available to its membership as we possibly can. The final thing I want to say is that in that regard, we've done some great work and starting to do some great work in developing a cultural diversity group within our, or as a subcommittee of our board, to actually ensure that we are connecting in the most appropriate ways with people from a diverse range of backgrounds and cultural backgrounds and so on and so forth.
One of the chief supporters of the convention this year was Iratech Corporation. We were joined at the convention by the CEO of Iratech, and he was introduced by Prue Watt and delivered the keynote speech.
Under Siemens leadership and guidance, Iris Service is comprised of leading technologies such as smart glasses, artificial intelligence and augmented reality, integrated with a network of highly trained remote agents. Through this platform, IRA is able to provide instant access to visual information to anyone at any time, anywhere. Suman holds an MBA in entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial studies from the UC San Diego Rady School of Management and a master's in computer engineering from the University of Missouri, Columbia, and a bachelor's in electrical and electronics engineering. Under Simmons' leadership, IRA has received some of the industry's top honours and awards, including being named Best Mobile Innovation for Education and Best Mobile Service for the Connected Life at Mobile World Congress 2019 Global Mobile Awards, in addition to being selected as one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018.
Why are we all here in this room today? You know, some of them are online listening to the radio, but why are we all in this room today? What is the common factor that has brought all of us together? You know, are we here to celebrate success? Is it about learning new skills? Or is it to network with new people in the industry? Well, I believe that yes, it's all these things. But more importantly, I believe we are here because we are looking for a sense of belonging, togetherness, and community. Yeah? It's what we gravitate towards as humans, because nothing else can replace the power of human connection. At its core, Aira is a technology company, but everything we do as a company is driven by the values that we, as human beings, all share. Values such as respect, empowerment, pursuit of information. As humans, we all have this innate ability to seek and find and discover the information and knowledge in our environment. This is the basis of what we do at Aira. We strive to make the information that surrounds any individual instantly accessible. And we are motivated to take this to new, unprecedented levels. And that's why our explorers call our service the description of life. So let's talk about, you know, we talked about humans. Now let's talk about technology. Did you know the letters in the Aira? And thanks to the person before, they already mentioned AI stands for artificial intelligence, you know. And RA stands for remote access. So when we first came up with the idea of Aira, we tried to build entirely using AI. You see, the goal of this project was to give my friend who is blind, his name is Matt Brock, lives in Denver, Colorado, a way to discover new neighborhood independently, to find a shop and pick some flowers for his lovely wife, Dawn. And to do it all as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So we turned to AI to provide this capability. And however, AI can only do so much. It can only detect objects and they are presented perfectly to a camera. But real life doesn't work that way. Yeah, so we are looking to change that. From detecting objects in the real world to providing thorough descriptions of an environment. It's all journey of discovery. It's a journey of learning and understanding the finite details and the associated context. Well, I am excited to say that we are now able to reach these greater levels of sophistication of AI. Because why? Because we have a human in the loop, and that is our Aira agents. Raise your hand or make some noise if you have experience working with an Aira agent. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. So for people who haven't raised your hands, you should. Yes. You should try it out, because otherwise you are leaving experiences on, you know, behind at the convention. You came here for the convention for the experiences, so you should do it. Our agents are our product. Our explorers love to work with our agents. We are highly selective about who gets to be an Aira agent. Let's talk about it. First of all, agents need to be possessing very specific characteristics, such as communication skills, the ability to multitask, map reading skills, and the ability to be empathetic, not and never be sympathetic. We train our agents to think like a set of eyes, not like a brain. Because our agent's job is to provide you with the contextual visual information so you can make informed decisions and actions. We know why explorers love our agents, but did you know our AI developers also love our agents too? I mean, what do human agents have to do with the AI? Well, let me tell you, that's the beauty of it. Well, we are taking all these learnings we have gathered from interactions between our explorers and agents and using them to build a smarter AI. So, unlike anywhere else in the world, we are going to be able to deliver this context-based AI that has learned from our own explorers real-life behaviors and actions, which I think is beautiful. So far we have talked about humans, yeah, and we touched on the AI. Where does AR come into play? Because the whole session is about AI, AR, and humans coming together. Let's talk about AR a little bit. So traditionally, AR, the augmented reality, yeah, it's understood as the digital information that is integrated into your physical world. It's normally done via smart glasses with a heads-up display, such as a Google Glass or a Vuzix. Sighted people today are already overwhelmed by the amount of visual information in the world, which means visual augmented reality is more of a distraction than a meaningful source of information or interaction. And that's one of the reasons why Google Glass was not adopted by general public. So AR in any form is computer-generated information that augments the physical world through one or more senses. So that's not just about the vision. That's not about the visual overlay. It's about when we augment a human using audio to interpret the physical world. It's called audio AR. So if you ask us what industry we are playing, that's the audio AR industry. We already employ audio AR technologies by having our agents, or even Chloe, which is our AI agent, interpret the visual world for our explorers and delivering the information via audio. Our augmented reality smart glasses, better known as Horizon, and I see a couple of them in the room, so thanks a lot for wearing them for me. it's awesome to see it. They are known as Horizon, and they do not have a heads-up display. Alternatively, they have a camera that is built into the bridge of the glasses to provide 120-degree field of view. These smart glasses also have Chloe, which is our AI, installed, whom explorers can interact, very similar to Alexa. And Chloe gets smarter every day. Why? Because it is learning every day from our growing base of explorers and the millions of tasks they conduct with our agents. So bringing all these major technology trends together, which is AI, AR, with a human in the loop is what is truly needed to create a solution that pushes the boundaries beyond what we thought was possible. Technology should not be measured by what it can do for you. It should be measured by what you can achieve with it and what are the new possibilities that you can create with it. So on the note of possibilities, right? Let's talk specifically how our explorers are benefiting from IRA today. Let's split them into three main categories. One, education and employment. Today, around 400 students around the globe at over 120 colleges and universities use IRA to navigate their campus, read complex education materials, and to enhance engagement in their social lives. Our data shows a retention rate of 92% among the blind and low vision students who are incorporating IRA in their daily life, compared to the US national average of 40%. In this context, I am now pleased to announce that Deakin University campuses in Australia are now free IRA access location to all their students. Yep, it's pretty cool. Employment. Around 25% of our sessions are related to conducting tasks at work or for finding employment. We are tracking enhanced efficiency and increased opportunities for AI solutions to be effective. Organizations today provide IRA as a reasonable accommodation to enhance workplace efficiency. And we also have created what we call our IRA employment program, which delivers free service to explorers conducting tasks to finding employment. Part of our mission to bringing unemployment rates in the community from 70% down to 7%. Number two, we talked about education and employment, and the second one is travel, navigation, and self-assurance, right? So we have what we call the IRA airport test. Raise your hand if you have used IRA at airport. Anybody here? Wow, 1, 2, 3. That's pretty cool, 4. And then 5. There you go. Thank you. This is a nice cozy group today, but I have 5 explorers who did the IRA airport test. Why is this important? Because it's all about measuring the speed and ease at which an explorer can navigate a chaotic environment such as an airport, from gate to gate to baggage claim to transportation. A number of explorers have told me it's about self-assurance. We now have a growing number of airports who provide free IRA access to blind and low vision travelers. Independent daily living task is number 3. From cooking at home, to shopping at the store, to reading a children's book, IRA agents and Chloe are always by our explorer side today. These are all the things that are happening today. Working together to do more every day. I'm pleased to say that to assist more people in more ways, we have a growing number of retail chains such as Walgreens, Target, who provide free IRA access to their shoppers. So those are the three verticals, if you will, that we are targeting: education, employment, traveling and self-assurance, independent living and quality of life. We are about to deliver more choice to Australia regarding IRA service. If you haven't already, you can download the IRA app today, here. Try it for free at the BCA convention. Once you go home to do the seven-day free trial. By the time you finish the trial, I'm pleased to let you know that we are, in fact, rolling in Australia the same range of plans that are available in the United States with billing in Australian dollars.
Yesterday we heard from Visibility, which is one of the sponsors for this convention. Let's now hear from another one, Renata Zanetti from Intopia. I was reading about Intopia in the convention program, and you describe yourselves as change makers. Now that's a really evocative phrase to me. Could you just talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So the mission of Intopia is to create an inclusive digital world. And I think when we're talking about change, we're wanting to not just say that technology is as it is, but we're wanting to say, how can we make the digital world more inclusive and more accessible? And how can we do that in a sustainable way? How can we work collaboratively to make sure that developers, tech experts, non-tech savvy people can think about digital inclusion as something for everyone?
Yeah, that's really interesting because accessibility world is changing very fast, as is the digital world generally, and more mainstream developers are getting on board.
Yes.
As well as the development of accessibility specific products becoming ever more quick and intriguing.
Yeah, there's a lot happening in the world, and I think it can be quite exciting. And I know one of the events that the program will be talking is the future as well, and thinking about artificial intelligence, and there are opportunities as well as challenges that are presented with the way that tech is developing. I'm looking forward to hearing more from some of the presenters over the course of the next few days, but definitely it's great to see more and more people interested in digital accessibility. It's not always the most savvy topic. There are a lot of acronyms, as you'd be aware. So one is ALI. A11Y or A11Y, which is taking out the 11 digits between A and Y, which is often used in Twitter as a shortcut for talking about digital accessibility. But for people who are outside the digital accessibility space, hearing the word ALI might evoke an image of pathway, or it might not necessarily indicate that it's A11Y, which is what a screen reader would usually announce. So there's a lot that we can do to try and make sure that people are aware of the different principles around web accessibility, like the WCAG 2.1 guidelines, which again is another fun acronym, but to really think about how can we make it easier for people to understand some of the basic principles around accessibility, and think about, you don't have to be an expert, but if you can learn, if you've got an openness to learn, and if you're willing to also take on expertise as well and work collaboratively, it makes a massive difference.
Intopia this year is a sponsor of the Blind Citizens Australia Convention. What does that mean to your organisation?
Intopia is delighted to be a sponsor of the Blind Citizens Australia Convention. We are really pleased to support different organisations. As a social enterprise, we donate at least 5% of all revenue. We're also what's called a B Corp, which is a benevolent corporation. It's got a number of different strands to that, but it's not just the opportunity to work and to collaborate with individuals with disabilities and organisations, but also we see it as a great forum that is brought together every 2 years, so we're happy to be sponsors.
We've looked at the sort of higher level approach that Intopia takes, but perhaps you could just talk about the things that you do operationally.
So what does Intopia do? Well, we do a number of things. One, we work often as a trusted advisor alongside and within organisations. Sometimes they're big organisations, sometimes it's smaller organisations, to help the development teams to embed accessibility, meet the WCAG criterion, but also to think about inclusion more broadly. Another thing that we do, and something that I manage, is called Intopia Connect. So we connect individuals with disability with organisations to actually give direct user feedback on products, websites, digital applications. And that's really important because it's paid. So we pay $100 an hour for individuals' time. And it's building up that understanding from developers that it's not just a set of guidelines on the side that they have to follow, but it's actually individuals that will be accessing their products or not able to access their products as a result of how it has been designed in the first place. So hopefully we're changing the mindsets of different developers, and we have seen that. We've actually had incredible feedback, not just from the developers, but also individuals with disabilities and a range of disabilities who have been involved in that process, who've said that they find that really rewarding to be able to give that direct feedback and have it heard.
What are you hoping to get out of this convention?
I'm really hoping to learn a little bit more about what's going on in the sector, what's great new technological advances, just to hear as well from individuals around Australia about what some of the priorities are, and to find out more about how and the ways in which Intopia can engage and promote inclusion more broadly.
Intopia sponsored the following session entitled The Future of Work.
Yeah, it was an absolutely fascinating session covering a lot of ground. We're going to play the first few minutes of the session now. Kelly Schultz, who is a customer inclusion protagonist for Customer Inc., explains the concept a little further.
The future of work is a term that's being thrown around probably by a lot of senior executives and government types, and that's probably why we're here and need to translate that into what it actually means in the real world. And in particular, we're going to drill down on some of what that means for people with blindness and low vision. The future of work covers a range of things. It can include the technology, a lot of what we've heard about this morning, the technology that's making things easier and changing the way we work, be it robotics, AI, AR, VR, whichever sort of acronym you want to use. It could be the skills and the education that's required to actually do the jobs that we think are going to be in the future. And it's possibly also the way we work. So the way we work and the tendency now for work to be contingent workforces, meaning that employers don't employ you full-time, they just employ you when they want you. And that has an impact on, obviously, our lives, our ability to pay the bills and actually live. So we're going to cover those topics for you this morning. And what I will do is introduce you to the very esteemed panel who are sitting here next to me. The first to my right is Megan Gunn. Megan works for the Department of Education here in Tasmania and is the Director of Vocational Learning and Career Education. Megan's been instrumental in the Tasmanian Certificate of Education and well-placed to understand the needs of both employers and their future workforce. Megan works with a lot of the departments here, including and industry groups and the not-for-profit sector, to ensure Tasmanians are equipped with the skills and attributes they need to have a fulfilling career, irrespective of their circumstances. Next to Megan is Rocco Cucci. Rocco is a systems analyst, business software specialist and solutions expert. And if you want to know what that means, I suggest you ask him later. He's also described as a relentless problem solver who embraces new ways of thinking and technologies. He also happens to be an esteemed member of the board of BCA. And then to the right of Rocco, we've got Suman on the panel as well, and we've heard from Suman already this morning, and you've also heard the significant achievements of Suman, so I won't embarrass him again with that. But I did do a bit of stalking on Suman and discovered that early in his career, he worked for a company called Wonderwear. I was a little disappointed to find out that it's a computer software company and has absolutely nothing to do with underpants for superheroes. So if you're interested in that, I'm sure Suman will give you more details on that as well. Now, we are 18 minutes into a session that was very well timed, so excuse me for pushing the point for our first question, but the first question I'm going to pose to each member of the panel in order, which is really for their two-minute, maybe we'll make it 90-second version, of what the future of work means to you personally. So the future of work for you as an individual and personally, what does it mean for you? We'll start with Megan.
Okay, thanks, Kelly. And firstly, thank you, everyone, for the opportunity to join you today. It's a real privilege. So for me personally, it's an exciting time, but it's a really challenging time. And I think our first two speakers this morning have named up the excitement in the new technology that we've got, but also the anxiety that goes with that because the nature of work has really changed.
Thank you. Rocco.
Good morning, everyone. And again, thanks for letting me come speak on this panel. Real privilege. The future of work to me, I guess, is unknown. We just heard the word change, or I think in the technology space, they like the word disruption because, you know, change is not disruptive enough, I guess. So I guess the certainty is that what's going to happen in the future, we really can't predict. You know, what the jobs that we have now were not invented 20 years ago. And what will be 20 years in the future, we probably really haven't even thought of now. But I am optimistic about it. I think that if we are able to, you know, we touched on the laws this morning. If we're able to include those laws, there's a space for blind people. in that future. So I'm really optimistic about it.
Thanks, Rocco. Suman?
Future of work for me personally means that any individual who is blind, or doesn't matter what kind of condition they have, they should be able to follow the pursue and pursue the dreams for the ideal job that they would want to go after. Today, there are existing programs, a lot of existing programs who focus and create training programs around, you know, employing people who are blind. For me, it doesn't scale. For me, it's about how do we create a platform or a system that actually fulfill and, you know, so that the individual can achieve the dream job that they would like.
Thank you. Great way to start. And we're going to continue with along the technology theme as our first first thing to explore. And technology, for me personally, has obviously changed significantly in my lifetime. To be sitting here with a phone, with my notes on a phone that's connected to my bone-conducting headphones that can read out all of my notes and none of you get to hear them, to my watch that's alerting me every 10 minutes to the fact that I need to speed up a little bit. Technology is enabling in so much of what we do. And we've heard about technology this morning and those risks and from both Ed and Suman. But Suman, I'm going to address that first question to you before we open it up to say that, that technology does play a significant role in all aspects of our future. But what do you see as the emerging technologies? What's coming out that really does have the most impact on work?
I think the main industry trends, if you think about what's happening out there, right? So, you know, obviously, you know, Mr. Ed and as well as I touched on the AI. The idea of AI is promising. The idea of AI is not there yet. And you know, we got to build it to a point where it can be scalable for enough people to make or eliminate any of the barriers that exist for any people today. So I think from the industry trends, there is a lot of investments that are happening on the AI space. Not just about the imaging technology, you know, that we talked today morning, but also a little bit understanding what we call the human behavior. What are the things that you can look in the past of what's happening in your physical world, and how can you predict what's going to happen next? So I think definitely from an AI perspective, things are going to be amazing, but it will probably take another, you know, 8-10 years to do something meaningful that's going to impact our workplace, but it's definitely coming along. The second aspect is on how technologies are shifting. So if you think about, 20 years ago, IBMs or Compaq and, you know, all these mainframe PCs that existed, it's like a centralized, you know, server computing platforms, if you will, yeah? What happens today? Today you have cloud, you have AWS, you have Microsoft Cloud and Google Cloud. It's very decentralized architecture. So when you think about any technology, ask yourself, is it decentralized enough that it will scale for larger number of use cases that you have? Why is it related to what we are talking about in accessibility today? Is we always talk about, you know, a washer and a dryer and, you know, being for them, you know, ability to be accessible, or a website for ability to be accessible. But I think there are supporting technologies that connect with each other. And that's kind of an industry trend today. There is no one single system that will solve all, you know, all your problems. I think it has to be an integrated set of systems that needs to come together for creating a greater value proposition. So I think, you know, those are a couple of key areas, I think, the industry trends are happening and how that will impact our industry today.
Thanks, Suman. What do you see as the impact to the actual jobs that are involved in that technology and bringing that technology to life?
Well, one of my goals, or at least that I'm pushing pretty hard, is this idea of 70% unemployment and then bringing it down to 7%. So let me ask you guys a question, right? You know, we all talk about the employment. I'm here sitting in front of you today, and I will tell you what are the biggest challenges that are people facing, you know, in the employment setting or in the work settings. 25% of all the things that happen today in regards to the employment at work has these following issues. They are about taking photos of receipts and uploading it to accounting systems. They are about accessing inaccessible websites for cards, calendar applications, or booking systems. It's about reading or editing an inaccessible PDF. Sometimes it's also about troubleshooting a computer. And it's also leveraging online meal delivery services. Who thought that would be the situation? And then 31% of our data shows that they are related to the physical access. The top five most example of the challenges are reading printed material, working with the touchscreen devices such as printers or coffee, reading numbers on physical items such as cards, finding physical items as well. And then I have, you know, 13% including navigation, and then 4% including accessing the Word, PowerPoint, Airbnb website, and so on and so forth. So I think there has to be a convergence of understanding what is the real need that exists and the real challenges that exist in the workplace, and then think about how technology can solve, rather than just thinking about a device and what the device can do. And that's my statement about you should not be thinking on what technology can do for you, but what an individual can achieve with that particular technology.
Earlier in the program, we promised you a trip to the theatre.
The BCA Blindness Service Provider Expectations Policy was launched today at the convention. The National Policy Council had a very creative way of describing exactly what that policy was about.
And it came in the form of a radio play.
BCA brings you Two Corners, exploring the lives of people in modern Australia and listening to the voices of those not always heard in the hubbub of the public square.
Good afternoon, I'm Barry O'Cryan. Tonight's Two Corners looks at the lives of blind Australians. What services do they need to live like other Australians? Where do they get their services? And what does a good service look like? Aid and Poor Folks follow two bright blind Australians in their quest for the right service.
Hello, I'm Aid and Poor Folks. Don't laugh, it's not that funny. I spoke to two blind and vision impaired people living in regional parts of Australia. I first spoke with Ben Dover, who lives in regional Victoria. Ben was recently diagnosed as having macular degeneration by her doctor. We can have Benita. It worked for PlaySkill, so it can work for us. Benita was gradually going to lose her sight, and she was recommended to attend Blind as a Bat, an agency in her area which was going to provide her with blindness and low vision services. Now, Benita is gradually losing her sight, as I said, and she's also over 65. Now, as you can imagine, to be losing your sight like this would be very confusing, and I'm joined now at her home by Benita. Hello, Benita. Ben, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Aidan.
So tell us a bit about this experience with Blind as a Bat when you went and spoke with them.
I'd begun to realise that I wasn't recognising people in the street, and it was getting harder and harder to read the paper and then my bills and whatever. So eventually I went off to see my doctor because it was getting a bit out of control. And my doctor suggested that I contact Blind as a Bat, so I did. And they thought it would be a very good idea if I came to see them. Now, I was a bit surprised because I thought they might come to see me, but no. I had to go to the city to see them. Fortunately, my daughter offered to go with me, so we went by train, and then we had to get a taxi because it's not near any public transport.
Oh, dear.
So I was a bit of a wreck by the time we got there. Yeah.
Doesn't sound good at all.
No. it was an adventure.
And what happened when you got there, when you finally did manage to get there? What then happened?
I went in for an assessment, they called it, and they told me all about what services they had for people like me. But they never asked me what I wanted to do with my life. They just told me what they had. And okay. Then they gave me a lot of stuff, a lot of information about who they were and what they did. But it was all on paper. And that's why I'd come there, because, you know, I couldn't read. So that wasn't...
That would have made it rather difficult.
...all that good. And then I did ask about, you know, well, all this stuff, is it free? Who pays for it? And they told me about this thing called My Aged Care, but I didn't really understand whether I would be paying for it or they would be paying for it or be free or whatever. So I went away with this stack of paper and my daughter and I went home. But then my daughter told me on the way home that they'd been making a promotional video while I was there and I was in it.
Oh, dear.
But nobody told me. So I actually felt pretty upset about that, I have to say. Yeah, so that was my day at Blind as the Bat.
It doesn't sound like it was a very positive day. How did all this make you feel? Was it pretty... made you feel more confused than ever?
It was confusing. Certainly it was confusing. But I think, like, that's a couple of weeks ago now. And at this stage, I think I do feel confused, but I also feel a bit lonely and I feel scared because I don't have answers to those questions about, you know, well, what can I do? What do I want to do that's going to, you know, enable me to live my life? How much is it going to cost? Will I have to move into some sort of aged care facility or something because I can't look after myself at home? I don't know any other people who've been through this experience. Right now I'm feeling scared and I'm worried.
And so you're just not sure where your future's going to go?
No, not right now, no. But, God, I'm working up the courage to work on it.
Well, I'm very pleased that you have the courage, but I'm very sorry to hear that your experience so far wasn't a good one. But I have another person. The other person I spoke to was Lena Little Closer. That reminds me of a song, I think, doesn't it? Maybe some of you too. Lena's experience, I think you will find, was vastly different. Lena lives in regional New South Wales. And Lena went blind after a car accident. She's a young lady and she left school and went blind after a car accident. And she was asked to approach or suggested to her that she approach an organisation called Vision Empower in her local area. And I'm talking to her now a little bit more about her experience. Lena, welcome to Two Corners.
Thanks, Aidan. Hi, everyone.
I keep wondering why people call me Aidan. But that's my name. So... So tell us a bit about your experience, Lena, with Vision Empower. Tell me, was it empowering?
Well, great, actually, because I was in hospital, you know, after a car accident at schoolies, unfortunately. But anyway, there was a really good occupational therapist at the hospital who put me onto Vision Empower, and they actually came to see me at home after I was discharged, and they talked to me a lot about the different things, the different services that that I could access from them and from other people. And they were giving me a lot of ideas, you know, about what I could use. And that was helpful because I wasn't sure then. You know, I just lost my eyesight and didn't really know. And they were able to talk to me about the NDIS, which I hadn't heard about before, and what that meant, and lots of information on CD initially, and that I could look through and sort of work out for myself what I wanted, and then I could just develop a plan from there, really.
And so tell me about some of the things that this plan included. Was it a whole range of things? Social connectivity, inclusion.
Yep.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, lots of orientation, mobility, just to get around the town a bit, and access to IT training so I can use a computer with JAWS and an iPhone. And that's been really good because I'm now at TAFE doing a course in business administration. And they also told me at Vision Empower about some other people who are blind in my area. They've got sort of Telelink groups, and they've also, there's Blind Citizens Australia that they put me onto.
Wow.
And they're a really great organisation, actually.
So who are they again?
Blind Citizens. You should look them up, Aidan. But it's good because I didn't know that there were any blind people in my area, and it seems that there are, and some of us have got together, actually. We've started a dragon boat team.
Wow.
People who are blind, people from TAFE. Yeah, so it's been good.
Well, I thank you very much for that. And also, just one quick final question. That organisation, do they involve you in any of their processes? So things like maybe consultative groups or becoming involved on the board?
Yeah, well, they did say that if I was ever unhappy about anything, there was a process that I could follow, and they sort of talked me through that. There's a client representative group, I think, that they described, and I might join that at some stage. The board, you know, it's for older people, so I might give that a miss. But they did say there are blind people on that board, actually. So they did say that there were ways to join if I wanted to.
Well, that's fantastic, and perhaps the only other thing I might add is that Ben Dover should move to New South Wales. And that's been me, Aidan Paul, folks, Hobart.
Two Corners is brought to you by BCA, not the ABC. It's broadcast weekly, except, of course, over several months of the Great Australian Summer Sleep Time. A podcast of the program is also available, or you can listen online via your BCA radio app. Investigative reporting is by Aidan Poorfolks, and the series' executive producer is Barry O'Crine.
A recommendation to endorse this policy was put before the convention and was unanimously carried.
Of course it was. After that, how could it not be? Now, speaking of service providers, various service providers were represented at this year's convention and provided an update in one of the sessions during the afternoon. One of those service providers was Vision Australia, who, of course, is one of this convention's major sponsors. We spoke to David Speyer from Vision Australia about some of their recent work and what they're offering on display at this convention.
I think it's really important for Vision Australia as a national provider to support such organisations as Blind Citizens Australia, and we're delighted to continue our contribution and sponsorship.
So the tagline for this convention is You Can Do It Your Way. That encompasses a whole bunch of things, including independence and technology. How do you see that, though, as a service provider? Because your role through either your products or your services is really to facilitate that.
I think that's very beneficial. The tagline is as you've described. It's really important that people make their own choices and are making self-determination at every juncture. And Vision Australia supports, absolutely, people choosing the services they get, who they get them from, and the kind of support they want from an organisation like Vision Australia.
Mm. And I guess that's your tagline, isn't it? Support to live the life you choose?
Absolutely.
Mm. You've got a display stand or a product stand at this convention. What are you displaying this weekend?
Independent living devices like a talking microwave and a convection frying pan. From a safety perspective, it's a very useful product. We've got the Google Home and how you can use and integrate Google Home into your life, and a couple of other products on the stand. Andrew Wheeler is here from our team, and ready and willing to display and demonstrate the products to anyone who's interested. And if you can't get to convention, you can always get down to one of Vision Australia stores, and we have many of those products on display, and our staff are willing and delighted to take you through how you use those.
Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that this convention is held in Hobart. Vision Australia doesn't yet have an office in Tasmania. Is there a way for people living in Tasmania to be able to look at these products, aside from this weekend at the moment?
That's a really challenging situation for us. We'd love to be in a position to be able to do so. So the short answer is unfortunately not. We'd like to be in a position to be able to do more. But as you know, we don't have an office down here, and whilst we're talking with a number of organisations about how we can bring our products to regional locations, we're not in a position to make any announcements yet.
Mm. And how can people get in touch with Vision Australia for further information?
Please jump online, look up our website, and or contact our national contact centre, and our staff are able to connect you through to the retail team. The specialist team that we have in retail and products, and if you're able to get to one of our locations around the country, we'd be delighted to see you.
You're in a lot of places around the country. Just tell us, give us an idea of where people can find you.
Well, our main locations are in Coorparoo in Queensland, Parramatta in New South Wales, suburb of Sydney, and a big location in Kooyong in Melbourne. But we have a number of other large regional sites, about 25 of them around the country, from the top end in Cairns and Townsville, and you know, through to Geelong, and locations throughout the eastern seaboard. And as you're probably aware, we've recently opened up in West Leederville in WA in Perth, our new office, and that's in the process of being kitted out to fully provide clients and customers with the opportunity to access our products there.
Vision Australia has an ongoing partnership with BCA. Could you just speak for a second about the value of that ongoing partnership?
The value to Vision Australia is the connection to the community's voice. We strongly advocate for the rights of people who are blind or vision impaired to participate in every part of life they choose. But obviously BCA is an independent organisation, and the voice of the community can also add to that voice for clients with the community, with government and with other agencies. So it's really important to partner up where appropriate, but also there are times when BCA needs to stand up and away from the agencies, and we support them in that role.
One of the things that always happens at the convention dinner is the presentation of the David Blyth Award. This year's recipient was Martin Stewart. I spoke to him about his life and the award.
Martin, firstly, congratulations on winning the David Blyth Award for 2019.
Thank you very much.
We've spoken to you a number of times on New Horizons and other publications about your work and advocacy in recent years, but where did you get started?
No, I'm from New South Wales. I came from the Hunter Valley, the coal fields there at Currie, where I was born in 1963. My brother and I, I'm a twin brother, were the first children to, as totally blind children, to attend mainstream schools in Newcastle. And then through wanting work, I moved to Victoria. I think the first time I felt politicised was out of the disaffection that was felt by not just me, but many of the workers at the RVIB's factory. I felt there was corrections that needed to be made and wage justice that needed to be achieved, and others felt the same. I just wanted to make that a collective effort, and through time, we actually did have some successful outcomes.
Tell me about the first few years of your working life. You said you moved down to Victoria. Did you move down specifically to work at the RVIB factory, or did you just feel that you'd get more work?
Yes, absolutely, because the opportunities for people who were good with their hands, and I say still are, were quite limited. And I used to be able to, through my father being a French polisher, work well with wood. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to use my hands to craft things and develop my own product. And the opportunity was there at the factory, which did actually work on many woodwork products. I'd say I was introduced to Blind Citizens Australia through cricket, because they introduced themselves at the cricket one day and I signed up then, which was one of the other ways that I learnt to influence through the Cricket Association and the board of control at that time. I was involved as an office bearer, and it was a great groundbreaking teaching educational experience for me.
And you've done an amazing amount of work in advocacy, particularly on behalf of blind and vision impaired people. What do you think would be some of the highlights of that?
I'm very proud of being able to get the public transport authorities here in Victoria to recognise the need for announcements. And through several actions, I was able to get them to come with me to Brisbane, where they replicated the train location system that they had in Queensland, came back to Melbourne with the authorities who were accompanying me, and they then introduced that system into the City Loop here in Melbourne. So I'm also very pleased with the industrial relations outcomes that occurred at the factory, some major groundbreaking arbitrated results there. The other public transport achievements, some recent ones. I feel that in the early days, I took on some very difficult issues, some sacred cows. That left me quite isolated and at times on the outer. This award has made me feel very welcomed and acknowledged. You don't do these things to get that, but I can tell you today it feels wonderful. And it's even better when it comes from your peers. It's not just personal, it's support for the causes that I have really tried hard to get on centre stage. When you have lived experience like we often do, and you get confronted by different obstacles, to be able to do something about them, not just for yourself, but for members of our community, is just such a great feeling.
That about wraps it up for tonight's program. We will be back at the same time tomorrow, as will be the live stream of the third day of our national convention, starting from 8:30 a.m.
That's right, and there's radio coverage available if you're listening in Tasmania. You can listen to Print Radio Tasmania, or if you're listening in Melbourne or Adelaide, you can listen on the Vision Australia Radio Iris service.
Tomorrow's coverage will include sessions on living with multiple disabilities and taking the stress out of travelling alone, as well as a life hack session on dealing with medical care and much more.
Don't forget that these sessions will be made available online from the Blind Citizens Australia website, and these highlights packages will also be made available on the New Horizons podcast feed.
We will see you tomorrow night. I'm Jonathan Craig.
And I'm Vaughan Bennison.
Thanks for listening to this highlights package from the Blind Citizens Australia National Convention. For more information about BCA, check out our website, www.bca.org.au, or listen to our weekly radio program and podcast, New Horizons. Thanks to our convention sponsors, Vision Australia and Guide Dogs Australia.